the wireless medium is what separates the two antennas, the receiver antenna and the transmitter antenna. And we think about this in terms of what we call propagation. And we think of an electromagnetic wave propagating from the transmitter antenna to the receiver antenna. And so when we think about propagation, one way to think about it is that it is where communication systems modeling and electromagnetics are sort of joined. And the reason I say sort of, I'll get to a little bit later about this slide, but let's first talk about a very sort of basic view of how the system works. So we start out with something called path loss. Let me say that again, path loss. And if we think about an ideal point source antenna, as a pulse of radiation is released from that, it goes out in a spherical pattern. And so we know that the amount of power available for a particular area is going to reduce as this sphere gets larger. In other words, as the wave front propagates farther and farther away. So we have what we call an inverse squared law for the path loss. And this is the fundamental cause of what we call attenuation of the signal from the transmitter to the receiver. And this attenuation you can think of as just a weakening of the signal. Now this is the ideal case. Notice that we have a point radiator in free space. There are no objects or anything like that. Well, the world is not quite like that. So we actually have other mechanisms that come into play that cause the propagation to be actually worse, or the attenuation to be actually worse than just a free space path loss. So we basically can think of the signal coming from a transmitter antenna and attempting to go to a receiver antenna. And the first sort of loss we have is what's associated with the transmission not through free space, but over what we call a ground plane or just the ground of the Earth. And then we move to the other things that get in the way. So when you think about your cell phone, for example, if you have a cell phone, one of the things that happens is that you don't have perfect coverage. And one of the first things that can happen is you can have a hill or a mountain in the way. And this is what we call shadowing, and it's a large-scale phenomenon. And it could also be a building or something like that. Now, the other thing that can happen that's very important is what's called multipath. So let's get rid of our mountain here and maybe put in some objects like a building or maybe a couple buildings. Here's a building, here's another building. And what happens if here's our transmitter and here's our receiver, the signal is going to not only have a direct path from the transmitter to receiver, but there will also be reflected paths from objects such as buildings. So that's what we call multipath propagation. And what happens is that, if you recall, these signals are sinusoids, and they actually add up here at the receiver. They add up there, and as you know, sinusoids can be either in phase or out of phase, or partially in phase or partially out of phase, and they add together, and they can add either constructively or destructively. And this leads to the next phenomenon, which we call fading. So typically when we model these systems, we think about path loss, shadowing, and fading, and we account for these using fairly simple models that again lead to, importantly, an attenuation of the signal. Now, this is a simplistic viewpoint because there are also phase effects, but I won't talk about that now. Now, the key thing that I want to conclude with on the wireless medium is that I addressed at the beginning the idea that propagation is where we have the merger or joining of communication systems thinking and electromagnetics. And actually, it really is kind of a sort of a thing because the communication engineers try not to think about that. And the reason it's too complicated. Now, it's possible for an environment such as the one you see here to generate a full 3D time domain electromagnetic simulation model of the system. But that's only realistic if you have infinite time or infinite computational resources, so we don't do that. Now, however, people have come up with simplified models for indoor propagation, and sometimes they actually avoid a full 3D wave electromagnetic simulation and do something called ray tracing. And this is quite similar to the ray tracing that's done to create realistic imagery in video games. But the point I want to make here is that, again, we're dealing with a layering. Obviously, at a fundamental level, we're dealing with Maxwell's equations and the propagation of electromagnetic waves through space. But in practice, when we engineer these systems, we abstract away those details, and we come up with models for attenuation of the signal based on these effects that we've already talked about. Fundamentally, what does the receiver have to do? Well, it has to tell what you're sending. So if you think about a digital communication system, it's going to be sending zeros and ones, and the receiver has to be able to tell a zero from a one. And this is called detection. And it's actually a very difficult thing to do. And this is primarily performed in the demodulator. So you'll hear the terms demodulation and detection interchangeably. Now here's where the challenges come. The first thing that happens is that the signal is weakened. And this is the attenuation that we just talked about, and it's serious. To give you an idea, typically in a wireless sensor network, we might transmit at a power level of 10 milliwatts. This is 10 dBm. And in the communication channel, due to all the things that go wrong, path loss, propagation over the ground, shadowing, etc., etc., you can easily have an attenuation of 90 dB. So that means we take the power and we multiply it by 10 to the minus ninth. This means that the received power is 10 times 10 to the minus 12, or 10 picowatts. Very, very weak. Now, actually, that would not be a problem. except there's noise. And the noise comes from something in this communication system. So we can say that noise is added to the signal. Question is where? And this is, in my experience, the primary misconception that students bring to a course in communication or wireless communication. Because you tend to think of, well, where does the noise come from? And you think, well, all the other things that are in the air. But in fact, most of the noise comes from the first stage of amplification in the receiver. And this is why most receivers have something called an LNA, or low noise amplifier. And this actually determines the entire noise performance, if you will, of the receiver. Now, let me go back and mention something that does occur in the air, if you will, between the transmitter antenna and the receiver antenna, and that is interference. And there's all kinds of interference out there, but it is something that is considered to be different and treated differently than the noise. Now, going back to the noise now, we find that the fundamental characteristic noise is that it is random. And this deserves to be in capital letters. So in order to design receivers or demodulators, communication systems engineers use the tools of probability and random processes. And remember, the noise is added to the signal primarily in the low noise amplifier. There are other places in the receiver where it comes into play. But this noise basically comes from the agitation or jostling of charge carriers inside the electronics, especially the LNA. And because it is this jostling, it is a function of temperature, and so it's also referred to as thermal noise. The noise is also extremely broad band, very wide bandwidth, so it's also referred to as white noise. And you can think in terms of the frequency domain. So here's F. We have a measure of receiver performance that we use, which is called N0. And it's basically the noise level of the receiver, and it's considered to be basically constant or flat. And of course, it isn't completely, but in most communication systems that we build, it is flat. It only tapers off at extraordinarily high frequencies. So this N0 is known as the noise PSD, or power spectral density. And this N0 is a really fundamental measure of receiver performance. Now, to give you a bit of a preview, we bring the noise and the received signal power together using another unique measure. And it turns out the performance of a radio system, or a receiver, I should say, is determined by a ratio of something called EB over this power spectral density N0. Now, EB is the bit energy, so it's in joules, or we can think of it as watt seconds. And N0 is interesting. If I go back up here, I'm looking at some kind of power here, as a function of frequency. And if I do that, N0 is measured in watts per hertz. And a little bit of thought, you'll be able to convince yourself that EB over N0 is a dimensionless quantity. And the final trick here is that the performance, which is referred to as the probability of error or probability of bit error, is a function of this ratio EB over N0. So this is a necessarily communication system-centric view of the system. Notice what I've done is I've taken the entire receiver and the transmitted power and the attenuation of the channel and captured that all in this ratio of EB over N0. So this really goes directly back to the ideas of Shannon, and the idea here that I think is important to take forward into this class is, again, thinking about this idea of complex systems using the notions of layering and abstraction. So again, we've taken this entire system and boiled it down to this really fundamental ratio. So far, we've gotten a taste of the engineering involved in a point-to-point wireless communication system where we have a transmitter and receiver, and we've talked about the different viewpoints, communication systems, and RF circuits, and all the issues that come into play there. But that apparently is not complex enough for what we want to do, because we aren't dealing with just a transmitter and a receiver. We're dealing with a network. And so we have a number of sensor nodes out there. I have to get my antenna right here. And you can imagine the complexity of what happens when, for example, this fellow here tries to transmit to this guy here, and this guy here tries to transmit to this guy there. The problem is that if this one here tries to transmit to this one here, his electromagnetic radiation is also going to impinge on this guy's antenna. So it's what we call a broadcast medium. And what this really implies is that we have, for lack of a better word, complex connectivity. It's not just a series of point-to-point links we're dealing with. We're dealing with the ability of a transmitter to send messages to many other receivers, whether it wants to or not. And yes, sometimes that's a good idea, but sometimes it's not what you want. So if I look at this picture again, I can see that there is a situation that we call multiple access. Now, what we mean by that is what we see in this picture right here, where we have two transmitters and two receivers, and we'd like, for example, for them to communicate at the same time. But this leads to interference. So one of the issues that we have to deal with is avoiding interference. And there are sort of two ways to look at this. So I'm going to look at this broad picture of multiple access. And it sort of breaks down here into two different ways. One is what I'll call XDMA, and the other is what I'll call MAC or MAC. Now, XDMA The X is what we'll fill in, but it has to do with how to do what we call multiple access. So if I look at XDMA, there are essentially three types. The first one is simply a matter of taking turns. It's called time division multiple access, or TDMA. Every node is given a period of time, an interval of time, or a slot in which to transmit. Very simple. Another one is to do FDMA. So this is frequency division multiple access, where every node in the network could be assigned a particular frequency. And finally, there's something interesting called CDMA, code division multiple access, but code division multiple access, it's a little bit complicated, but it involves a clever combination of both frequency and time. Now, this sort of multiple access technique, a way of sharing this radio channel, is actually okay except for one problem. And that is that it's very difficult to do the actual sharing in a distributed way. You would like to have a central guy that would say, okay, you, node number 20, get frequency or time slot number 42. But in sensor networks, you may not have the luxury of having what we call centralized control. And that's where we end up doing some kind of MAC. And MAC stands for Media Access Control. And basically the idea of MAC is what we think of as just conversational etiquette. When you are in a group of people, people instinctively, unless they are aggressive and interrupt, they instinctively wait until there's a gap to start talking. So it's simply a sort of listen before send. Now, obviously, that may be inefficient. And so there are other more complex techniques that we'll get into later in the course. But this gives you at least an idea of the problems that you run into when you go from a point-to-point communication system to a network system where you have multiple transmitters and multiple receivers. And so later on in the course, we will address network engineering, you can call it, that deals with the more complex case of lots of communication nodes out there that want to send information. Let's put this lecture in the context of the big picture of the whole course. And most engineering problems start out with some real-world problem that we're trying to solve. And we could have many different sensing missions, ranging from defense to safety to environmental control. In large part, the sensing mission is defined by the embedding environment. So, for example, you might be interested in monitoring the energy consumption of a building so you can find out how to conserve energy. Well, the sensor network design is going to differ strongly on whether it happens to be a factory, say, or an office. Now, in this course, we will spend a lot of time talking about environmental and ecosystem sensing just to ground what we do in a real-world application. So here's where the sensor cloud is placed in our site or deployment. And you can see all the sensors are out there and they're networked together. Here we've blown up one sensor to show you the subsystems that we're going to be talking about. And we've introduced the radio communications or wireless link. We've talked some about networking. At the beginning of the lecture, we also discussed some of the issues having to do with the sensing and the analog electronics and the analog to digital
conversion, etc. We talked a little bit about energy. We'll be talking a lot more about that later. And we briefly mentioned embedded control, and we'll talk about how that is the sort of manager of the sensor. So all this is going to be placed in the context of these larger issues throughout the course, and we're going to discuss the engineering details of these various aspects and how they relate to each other in the remainder of the course. The course structure is defined in detail in the syllabus, so I just want to hit a couple highlights here. And the first is that, as you've gathered, we have videos on the web. And we hope that you agree that it's a good idea for at least two reasons. Number one, it allows us as professors to combine our expertise from different areas in electrical engineering in one course. And secondly, it allows you to watch the lectures anytime, anywhere. Complementing that is the in-class Q&A and discussion. So we can spend in-class time going over questions that you have and bring up new ideas, new facets of wireless sensor networks and wireless communications to look at. These others, as you see here, are covered in the syllabus and will be discussed live in class. Here's an outline of the technical topics of the course. And you're already here in week one with two video lecture modules, the motivation and the introduction and overview. And what I want to talk about here is how we're going to approach understanding wireless sensor networks. And our strategy is to try to go from the physical thing that we are sensing in the environment, such as a temperature, and how that gets represented ultimately as a number on the computer desktop of some user. So we first start out next week with the second module, Systems Engineering Applied to Sensor Networks, to give an overview of the broad picture of how we can view them as complex engineered systems and how we approach them. And then we're going to take it from the field all the way to the desktop. So we're going to start out with the transducers, go to A to D conversion, talk about the radio frequency hardware, the wireless communication channel, and this all happens in the first 7 weeks of the course. We build on our knowledge of wireless communications channels to talk about communication theory as it applies to wireless sensor networks, and we will also talk about communication theory in general wireless communication applications. Then we'll move up the layered architecture of a network to the networking aspects. Then at the end of the course, we'll talk about how the sensor is managed by using embedded computing systems. And then we'll wrap it all up, talking about systems engineering. And then at the end of the course, you'll be presenting your student videos. And throughout the course, we'll have some hands-on experience that help you get a better understanding of some of the issues that are involved in the engineering of wireless sensor networks.